This is Eric from Cheyenne, Wyoming, and you're listening to the Pro Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, hockey fans from around the world. I am Richard Cote, the producer of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. It is the second line edition of the podcast, and you know what that means. Yes, hail, hail, the gang is all here. It means the second line is back on the second line. You know, no disrespect, this is where we belong. This is our home. This is us, guys.
No, this is the first us. Line now.
Richard Cote here with Lou Lafredo and Jacob Doherty. Lou, how are things in Albuquerque?
Okay, I guess we're just top six, right?
Yeah.
Are we classified as top six?
Sure. Okay. Top six, I'll take it. I would love to be a top six player, but, you know, I am a top six on this podcast out of five.
Right.
Weird. Okay.
So one thing before we get too far into this, we're trying to keep up with all the kids and what they're doing these days. Shelly Lima and Jack Lima out of California, out of the San Jose area, they created an Instagram page for us, and the handle is @PHN_BSOG. The BSOG is Best Shots of the Game. Mm-hmm. So if you want to see, it's still new, but if you want to see all of the really good photographs coming off of prohockeynews.com, that's the place to go. Go register, or if you aren't registered, look us up and try and follow us, please.
That is one of my favorite parts of the website. Best articles that I come across are the best shots of the game. Just being a photography nerd, I just love seeing what our columnists, what our photographers, what our creators are able to capture out of those games. They get some very spectacular shots. So I would highly recommend following that account, which I will be as soon as I have my phone accessible again after we record this episode. Jacob Doherty also joining us up in Edmonton. Jacob, I mean, what's the feeling after the start of the season here?
Yes.
The feeling is yes. Okay.
It's bad. It's very bad. I'm very angry and sad. And we're going to talk about it later.
Yes. Yes, we are. Because I think there's one area that Edmonton needs to work on, and we'll touch base on that later. You know, it's not a rip on their goaltending, which we can rip on for like six episodes, but let's keep things tidy here. Let's keep things short and trim, just like Manscaped. Thanks to our friends Manscaped for sponsoring the Pro Hockey News Podcast. If you want to save 20% on your purchase from Manscaped, head over to prohockeynews.com, click on one of our banner ads, or you can go over to manscaped.com/prohockeynews. That will save you a good chunk of change on your Manscaped product of choice. All right. I have a little bit of a rant this week. I know I just went on a mini rant to end begin this episode. I have a full rant, but it won't take too long, I promise. If you stick with us, we'll get to your favorite bangers and mash in just a second, but let me get my rant out of the way here. It has to do with national networks broadcasting championship games. And I know I'm switching leagues, going over to baseball here. I'm a big fan of the Rangers, the Texas Rangers, who are in the American League Championship Series right now. There is a national network who is covering it, but they also have a sub channel that is cable subscription only. And all I have to do is ask these big networks, if you are going to be hosting these championship games, if you have a national network that gets you a larger audience, please put the deciding games on that channel. Games 1, 2, and 3 of a 7-game series, you can start those out on cable all you want, but please, for the accessibility of all the fans out there, put the deciding games out on the channel that most people can get, because I'm unable to watch my Texas Rangers eventually fail against the Houston Astros. They had a 2-0 series lead, and they're probably going to be tied at 2 at the end of today. They are tied at 2. They're probably going to be down 3-2 by the end of today. If that's just how the season goes, but please, deciding games, get the biggest audience because that's what we want to watch. Okay. Rant over. Lou, we are back in full swing. We have some news from across the pond. Take us away with Bangers and Mash.
Yes, I have my Tam O'Shanter on.
It looks sharp, by the way.
I love this hat. I just love this cap all the way around. So this is our first report coming over from the EIHL. And speaking of photographs, we've been getting some absolutely fabulous images from Mick Johnson, who is our beat writer and photographer in Sheffield and covers the Steelers. And while I'm talking about the Steelers, you would think that I had actually worked in radio at one time. The Sheffield Steelers actually lead the EIHL standings so far in the early season. Through six games, they've picked up 10 points. They've gone with five wins and one loss. Coming up in second, the Nottingham Panthers have had gotten off to a very good start this year. They've got 8 points, one game back, one game in hand on the Steelers. The third place, Manchester Storm, coming in at 7 points. Belfast Giants have only played three games so far, but they have 6 points. They are undefeated, so to speak. The Belfast Giants have been playing in the CHL Challenge Cup out of Europe and actually did very well, but were eliminated on points. I think a single point kept them out of the quarterfinals in the Challenge Cup. So rounding out the rest, just so that everyone knows, the other teams that come through EIHL in fifth are the Cardiff Devils, the Fife Flyers, Dundee Stars. And so kind of the interesting thing there is that Fife and Dundee, the two Scottish teams, are above the cutoff line. It's a long way to go, I realize, but it's nice to see Scotland represented above the cut. Coventry Blaze in eighth, Glasgow Clan and Guildford Flames round out the bottom two. So that's, you know, we are only, I think, 3 weeks in. This is the fourth week, actually. Things are still obviously competitive and looking forward to the rest of the season. But that's it. Sheffield Steelers are your number one team in the EIHL.
So, Lou, in your mind, in this early part of the season, as they're kicking stuff off, you know, first 3 weeks of the season, who is the team to watch right now? Who's going to be making the biggest noise?
It's almost a cliche to say the Steelers, but the rosters are not what we are used to over here. These are open rosters. There are not minor leagues, you know, an established minor league underneath them. So the only restrictions on bringing in new players is whether they are UK or expats out of, you know, typically out of North America and Europe. So there are an awful lot of adjustments. In fact, Guildford Flames already made an adjustment this week. But I would still think that Belfast and Sheffield are probably the top two this season to be watching. The early success of the Manchester Storm, portends some success this season, but I would still lay my cards with Belfast first, Sheffield second.
All right. Well, as we watch the action going on over there in the UK, let's bring things back over here to the North American continent. We have a couple of minor league leagues that have gotten underway. The ECHL just started competition. I believe the Florida Everblades, the reigning Kelly Cup champion, is just kicked off their season last night as we record this on Friday, October 20th. Everblades are 1-0, and they played the Orlando Solar Bears, who are 0-1. Figure. They went to a shootout last night, so you know, a little bit closer contest, but you know, Florida on a on the road, opening a new season right after a championship, still able to squeak out a win. And I'm sure they would like to be saying, you know, what hangover, you know, but that was a little close for comfort for the reigning champs. The only other action we've had is the Rapid City Rush, who took care of the Iowa Heartlanders by a score of 4-2. Everybody else has yet to play their first game. They'll be getting action going tonight and this weekend, so we'll be looking forward to that. If we look over to the AHL, a little more action there. They've had a few more games played. So we'll go through the standings, the top four of each division. The Atlantic Division, the Hartford Wolfpack in the number one spot with 4 points. The Providence Bruins in the number two spot with 3 points. The Charlotte Checkers in the number three spot with 2 points. And the Hershey Bears pretty much tied with everybody else in the division with 2 points. In the North Division, the Rochester Americans with 5 points lead the way. The Syracuse Crunch with 4 points. In the number two spot, the Toronto Marlies in the number three spot with 3 points. Hey there, make a wish. And in the number four spot, the Belleville Senators, the Baby Sens with 2 points. Looking over to the Central Division, the Grand Rapid Griffins in on the top of that division with 4 points. The Rockford Ice Hogs, still love that name, with number two with 2 points in the number two spot. The Texas Stars in the number three spot with 2 points. And the Milwaukee Admirals rounding out your top four, also with 2 points. But hey, they are undefeated at 1-0. Going to the Pacific Division, here's a team I'm going to want to talk about here in just a second. The Henderson Silver Knights with 4 points. The San Diego Gulls, the Abbotsford Canucks, and the Tucson Roadrunners all with 4 points, and they've all played two games. But the reason I'm going to want to come back to the Henderson Silver Knights, yes, they are the affiliate of the Stanley Cup champion Vegas Golden Knights, and it shows right now with a goal differential of 6 goals in 2 games. They've scored 11 goals, allowed 5. This is a team, Lou, who looks like they are just clicking on all cylinders right now, right out of the gate.
Well, not much is in the stars against them right now. I mean, let's face it, the Golden Knights are stacked and loaded, so to speak. And consequently, the talent that is in Henderson has no place to go in terms of going up. So they are going to have time to gel as a team, put together a pretty good run before any call-ups might happen later in the season for whatever reason. So Silver Knights are almost as stacked as the Goldens are.
Yeah. And, you know, it helps that their first two games were against probably a little bit of a depleted Iowa Wild team. Just, you know, given what their parent affiliate is doing in the NHL right now. You have a 4-2 game to open the season. Okay, and that's not outside the realm of possibility. The very next night, 7-3 win for Henderson. Yeah. It's just... You know, they got it going on. And like you said, at the end of last season, they didn't really have much movement as far as the roster went. They were able to solidify and, as you said, gel as a team. So this is going to be one of those cases where it's going to be fun to watch the parent club and then the minor league affiliate, because these are two teams who are going to be, you know, highly potent when it comes to offense. And we'll see how that defense plays out going down the road. Another thing I want to bring up, another major announcement in the minor leagues. Lou, I'm sure you know just a hair more about this than I do. The Cleveland Monsters and the Columbus Blue Jackets have announced a multi-year partnership between the two clubs. They're going to extend their partnership. They didn't give an exact end date, but from what I'm reading in the press release, it shall take us till the end of the current decade. So at least till 2029, 2030 season.
Yes. The press release is in fact a little bit vague on that, but you're right. It's the end of the decade. So the 2029-30 season.
And, you know, I got to think that the Columbus Blue Jackets are extremely happy about this because they have to have some affiliation with a championship with the Cleveland Monsters, who last won their league's championship. What was it? The 2015 season?
Yes, 2015. Exactly right.
Yep. when the Monsters won the Calder Cup. So, you know, at least the Blue Jackets have something to hold on to, saying that they have a championship tied to their name.
Yes. And I'm sorry, but I find it to be one of the coolest logos.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. I love it. Just, the Cleveland,
especially the new one, the new version of it is really cool. I have lamented though that they changed from the Lake Erie Monsters to the Cleveland Monsters. The Lake Erie thing with all the toxins out there just just made more sense. You know, it was tongue in cheek, but I always liked that. So
more likely to get monsters. But have you been to Cleveland?
Yes, I love Cleveland. It's been quite some time, but used to enjoy going to the Flats in Cleveland. There was a great comedy store out there. So a number of really good acts out there. Cleveland it's been so long. Went to the old Indians stadium.
Okay.
And that was old. you sat down out in the bleachers, and you could see parts of the structure shift on the opposite side. but it was a great place to see a baseball game.
All right. So, yeah, we have an extension between the AHL affiliate and their parent affiliate with the Columbus Blue Jackets, bringing us to the NHL. We've had a little bit of action going on since the season opened up, last Tuesday, I believe. The 9th was the first game, or the 10th? 10th was the first games in the NHL. We've had time to kind of look at it, you know, the teams competing, how we think they're going to be doing. And I'm just going to say this hands down, this is probably the biggest story of the season, and that is the Connor Bedard watch. As we know, he's gone through 5 contests. He's registered 3 points, 1 goal, 2 assists. He's been blanked in his last 2 games. Two fairly decent opponents. So I'm not going to say one way or the other whether he's going to be a success or a bust. Definitely too early to say if he's going to be a bust, because there's still plenty of season left. But Jacob, I want to bring you in here. I know one of your favorite players, Taylor Hall, has been mentoring Bedard as he's starting his young NHL career. What are your takes with how Bedard's entry to the league has been?
I think it's fairly expected. It's realistic. Bedard's 18 years old.
Yes.
He's a young kid, and I think there are some parts of his game, which will improve over time. I think one thing that really was visible to me is his really bad faceoff percentage. Mm-hmm. It's worst in the league with players who've taken more than 50 faceoffs to this point. He's averaging 32.3%. And his teammate Jason Dickinson is right behind him on that stat with the second worst. So, Chicago is very much struggling to get offensive zone faceoff wins, and faceoff wins in general. So it's mm-hmm. a lot difficult when you don't have the puck to actually score and produce points. And Bedard's an 18-year-old who's averaging over 20 minutes a game, almost 21 minutes.
Yep.
The NHL, and that's going to really take a toll on him, especially as the season goes on, because he has not played an 82-game schedule.
That's true.
The WHL, it was in WHL with Regina. Yeah. I believe has a 50-something or 50 to 60-game schedule-ish.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not anywhere close to what it is in the NHL, and there's a lot more traveling that you have to do in the NHL because you're going throughout the entire continent. So
right.
I think he's trying to pace himself, I hope, but I think I think the expectations need to cool off. He's not going to be a point per game player. Almost no rookies are.
No,
that's just not a common thing. And Bedard is a great player. His talent is clear. And it's going to be great watching him, but I think the media needs to chill out a tiny bit. Just remember, still a rookie.
Still a rookie, right. I mean, the fact that in his very first game, he gets an assist. Second game, gets his first goal. Third game, you know, racks up another point. I think the pressure, I don't want to say the pressure is off of him, but it is definitely eased after that first goal. And, you know, media is going to have him under scrutiny for the entire season just because he was so sought after and the numbers he put up in the WHL were astronomical. Lou, I know you have thoughts about putting pressure on young athletes. How he's produced so far, do you think he has been worth all the buzz? Do you think that he's going to be able to be a success in this league?
Answering the second one first, yes, he will mm-hmm. be a success. But I think you all know, and I'm sure our listeners know how I feel about, as you said, young players with all that pressure being put on them. Jacob, you just said it was 32% win percentage on the faceoffs. You know, look, that's an issue of size. He's being out-muscled in the faceoff circle. At some point in a year, 2 years, he is going, you know, when he hits 20, he will correct that faceoff percentage. And Chicago will then start having an offensive opportunities in the attacking zone. But until he puts on size and muscle, he's going to be a tad off. Connor McDavid was how big when he came in?
6'2".
Yeah. Bedard is not 6'2".
He's 5'10".
5'10".
5'10". They've given up 4 inches and how many pounds on his competition in the faceoff dot. His skating ability is unquestionable. It's the stamina over an 82-game season, as Jacob has already said. But I think he's going to be great.
Yeah.
But I wish the NHL would dial back. You know, never mind the media. The NHL needs to dial back the expectations.
It's true. And so I'm actually going to go let's edge away from what the league needs to be doing right now. What do the Chicago Blackhawks need to do to ensure his growth as a player and his success further down the line? Lou, what do you think the club needs to be doing to kind of to help him mature as a player?
First of all, making sure that his two line mates, whoever they might be over the course of the season, and I think it ought to change. I don't think he should be locked in with any two particular wingers. So I think it's management of whoever is his whoever his line mates are. That's the key. And I don't know. Do you sit a number one? Is he a healthy scratch?
Oh,
over the course of the season.
Jacob, now, I like your reaction there.
And it's nothing personal. You know, no. Again, it's nothing personal, but you asked about how to manage it. So,
yeah.
Jacob, what do you think?
I think fans will have Dickinson's head if he – or sorry, not Dickinson.
No.
Who's their head coach?
Richardson.
Yeah. There we go. They'll have his head if he's a healthy scratch, I think. But I think maybe load management just in games because – having almost 21 minutes of ice time for a game is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that needs to kind of get cut down a bit just so he can develop and have good quality minutes and isn't forced to coast at certain points in the game or when it comes to the third period, when it's really crunch time in certain games, that he can actually go and put 110% onto the shift. And he's not gassed by playing 20 minutes up to that point.
I think it's a little combination of both. I think it's as far as Jacob said, I think it's you dial back his minutes per game with opponents that, I mean, realistically, this Chicago lineup is not going to be, you know, going to be crushing. You look at your Colorados, your Torontos, your Bostons, those three teams right there, I think those are where you dial back his minutes, where you kind of, you get him in the game, you get him some repetitions, knowing that, I mean, the talent on the other side is going to challenge him, but you don't want him to be overwhelmed being a new player in the league. Once you hit like the Montreals, once you hit the Nashvilles, once you hit the San Jose's, that's when you increase his minutes a little bit. That's when you get him even more repetition, because you know he's going to be able to handle that roster. But maybe that's just my thoughts on that.
Well, just pick on Boston for a minute. Do you want him lugging Brad Marchand or Milan Lucic up and down the ice on his back?
We saw what happened with Taylor. What happened with Taylor Hall against the Bruins. I mean,
yeah. You, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, remember in the airplane?
Yeah, right.
Just limit his ice time. I think to 21 minutes, more than a third of the game at 18 years of age. How about dialing that back to, what would you think of 15?
I would think no matter who the opponent is, you try and cap that as close to 18 as possible. I think that would be the max you would want to go.
Yeah, 18, 19, I think is fine. Actually, probably 18 is probably good, yeah.
15, yeah, that's less than a period of play per game. So is 18, but I don't know. I feel like 18 is just like a good solid number to at least get those reps in, get those face-off chances to try and increase those numbers. Just get that practice in, because as you had mentioned, the skates, we know he's got them. We know he's quite fast. And he's got a ridiculous wrist shot. He just needs to aim it a little bit better, and he's on the way. All right. So there are, throughout the season, this is going to be the biggest topic. This is going to be what everybody's talking about, is how Connor Bedard's doing, how he's comparing to, the other Connor up in Edmonton. Speaking of Edmonton, they got some issues. They got some things that they need to solve here. Through the season, they've played four games. They are 3-1. They have a -6 goal differential. I find it weird to see the Kings even this early in the season in second place in this division. I would expect Edmonton to be right on Vegas's heels, even at the start, but. 11 goals in four games. The offense doesn't really seem to be there as well. Jacob, this is your team. This is a team you've been following for a long time. What's the issue? Is there a magic bullet to fix all this?
I think there's no magic bullet. I think the Oilers are just generally playing poorly. A large part of the goal differential, which should honestly be worse, if that game against Nashville wasn't a 6-1 win, the goal differential between the 8-1 loss in Vancouver and the 4-1 loss against Philadelphia yesterday would absolutely have been killing the Oilers. And I think the transition game has been abysmal. It's basically just been McDavid or Dump and Chase. It's just one of two things. And they've never really worked out. Like, even with Vancouver, I saw so many silly passes to McDavid that just got picked up because a Bouchard wasn't paying attention, or Nurse just does some weird pass to who the hell knows where and gives it away. And that gives them a 2-on-1. Like, it, there are so many bad decisions being made. I think it might be a coaching issue, but I don't know how it's going to be a coaching solution, because a lot of the problems is we have McDavid, we're going to use McDavid, and then the other team says, okay, they're going to use McDavid, let's make sure that we don't give him any space, we box him out, and then we have the Oilers have nobody else. There's no creativity on this team, especially in the offensive zone. If they somehow magically get in there, barring a mistake from the defense to get in, there's just nothing.
Yeah.
There.
I was looking through the stats, and I know this is one that a lot of fans, a lot of players tend to see as a throwaway stat, but when we're talking about defense, I tend to take a little bit more stake in this, and that is the plus minus differential. Looking at their roster, there are, one, two, three, four, five, six players who are tied for the best plus minus on the team. And that is zero. Their top six players in that category are at a zero. Everyone else is in the minus column, including, I believe, five of their six rostered defensemen who are in the minus.
Yeah, and Dreisaitl is tied for second in scoring in the NHL.
They got two guys who are putting it in the net and nobody else who's playing defense. The goaltending is not going to get off scot-free either. Goaltending has had some issues. Jack Campbell through three games has a 3.66 goals against average. While Stuart Skinnerd, who has started one game but has played in two, has a 5.33 goals against average. Skinner's save percentage on the season through the two games that he's played in, 75% save percentage. Jack Campbell, a little north of 90. As long as I've been following or paying attention to the Edmonton Oilers, goaltending has always been their issue. But I think this season it's kind of compounded into nobody's helping them out. These numbers have got to be exacerbated because of the lack of defense. But is there anybody, Jacob, that you as a fan would like to see, or do you think there's any goalie available who they could plug in to solve this issue?
So I'm of the mind that this isn't actually a goaltending problem.
Okay.
And I think this has been a large issue, especially going back to Devin Dubnyk when he was an Oiler, and that's like 10 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And the defense would just have some really poor decision-making and just give the puck in a really bad spot to the other team, or there's just someone not covering the net or not trying to push someone out of the crease, and there's a guy screening the goalie or perfectly positioned for a tip-in or a rebound. The Oilers aren't protecting the blue paint and the area around that. I think they need to start doing that, and they have the players to do that. Darnell Nurse has proven that he is very good at it. When Dave Tippett was in town, Darnell Nurse was a top four or a top two defenseman on a good team in the NHL. He's barely a top four defenseman right now, and he's playing like 23 minutes in crucial situations.
He's tied for the plus minus lead on that team.
Yeah, because he's on
the. So don't tell me he's not playing defense.
He's not playing defense, Richard. He's not playing good defense.
Okay.
But and he can.
Yeah,
he can. We've seen it.
Yeah.
He was really good. He was an elite defenseman for two seasons, and then he stopped.
I think Edmonton needs. I mean, you can't base all of your defensive play on one player.
That's what they're doing.
Who is also a very competent defenseman. He is also tied for your team's lead of plus minus at zero. But they are the only two defensemen on that team who lead that category. CeCe has an assist on the season. But I mean, everyone else is pretty blank.
I mean, CeCe, you're never going to get anything too amazing from. Like, he's going to be a standard defenseman in the NHL. A lot of the young players that we were expecting, David DeHarde and Philip Broberg, mm-hmm. aren't really doing much. DeHarde just gets into a fight immediately, and he has been doing a good job of, you know, trying to clear the front of the net. But other than that, Kulak's also been kind of meh.
Yeah. I think it's more the pieces that are around Darnell Nurse and Cody Ceci. I think they need to start thinking about how deep they want, they need their blue line to be, which is right now it's kiddie pool shallow at this point.
Yeah. It just feels, I think the one way I can summarize it is there's no discernible strengths, but there are a lot of visible weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel with the Oilers defense and goaltending for that matter.
All right. Well, I mean, just looking at the standings here, the Oilers, they're not the worst team in the league at this point. I mean, they're not the best. We have some undefeated teams, and we definitely have a completely defeated team who's also in your division. But let's start talking about the undefeated teams. Currently, we have three teams who have zeros in that loss column. And you know what? I'll just mention it right now. Boston Bruins, Vegas Golden Knights, Colorado Avalanche, all undefeated after playing at least three games. Boston's played three, Vegas has played five, and Colorado has played four. So this is a question we're going to be putting out to listeners on our Spotify on the Spotify app. If you go there, we're going to have this poll here. We want to hear from you and see what you think about this topic. Who is going to lose their first, or who's going to lose a game first between these three, Colorado, Boston, or Vegas? I think I know Jacob's answer, but I'm going to go to Jacob first. Between these three, who's losing their first game?
So this isn't me hating Boston with every fiber of my being. But it is going to be, I think it's going to be Boston because the teams that they're playing, all three teams are in action on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Boston's playing LA, Carolina, or Colorado's playing Carolina, and Vegas is playing Chicago.
Right.
I think Boston has the harder team to play against, as well as they're playing back to back. So if all three teams win, they play Anaheim on Sunday. So technically there's more games for them to be playing in a short period of time.
Right. Yeah. Boston definitely has the more condensed schedule of the three. They have a better chance of losing that first game first, but a harder opponent on Saturday, Carolina and Colorado, that you don't think Colorado has the harder opponent?
I think Carolina hasn't been that great this season.
They're 3-2.
Yeah, they haven't really. I don't think they've set the world on fire. I think LA has been a lot better. Personally.
Okay. Lou, let me get look at your take. Between these three, who's got the hardest shot at remaining undefeated?
Well, I'm going to add to your angst and say Colorado, because Carolina will be coming in with something of a grudge after losing to the Seattle Kraken 4-1 last night.
Mm-hmm.
So Carolina might be a little put off by that. I am with Jacob, though, that although I've never been on the Carolina bandwagon, but I don't think that they have been playing particularly well. Yes, they're 3-2, but I don't know that it's been particularly well. I get the feeling that Vegas is the Boston of 23-24 season.
Oh, okay.
And Boston, I think, actually, you know what? Boston's first because they're in the earlier time zone. I think you may see both go down, but I'm still, you know, we have to correct for time zones here.
Okay.
Because Vegas will be three time zones. So
the Vegas game starts first.
Oh, it does.
The Boston game is in LA, so LA starts the last
time. Oh, it's reversed. It's reversed. Okay. I'm going to still stick with Colorado.
Okay.
With Colorado going down first.
Going down first. Looking at the schedules, I think Colorado has the hardest schedule coming up. They have Carolina, then they're at New York, at Pittsburgh, at Buffalo, and then you got St. Louis thrown in there, and then you have Vegas. So their next six games, realistically, three of them are very losable against quality opponents. Boston at LA, I'm not sold on the Kings this year. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's that they've been so bad the last few years that I'm just not sold on them. I feel like the beginning of the season has been a flash in the pan for them. They had a 5-1 win against Winnipeg, 7-3 win against Minnesota. I don't see Boston losing to LA. Then they have Anaheim. They're at Anaheim, at Chicago. Then they host Anaheim. Detroit, I think, is going to be the first real test of the Bruins. And that is on October 28th. Again, Jacob, I think you hit it on the head. Boston has the most condensed schedule, so I think they have the hardest time date-wise continuing that streak. And then Vegas at Chicago versus Philadelphia versus Chicago, at LA versus Montreal versus Winnipeg. In their next six games, I don't really see an opponent who at this, you know, what we've seen with Vegas so far this season, you know, there's going to be a loss in those six, but it, you know, coin flip at this point, none of them are overpoweringly like this is going to be a team who's overmatched or who will overmatch Vegas. It's when is the fatigue going to sit in to me? So Vegas, I mean, realistically, they could go undefeated in these next six, but you know, one's going to drop at some point. So I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to actually agree with Jacob on this. Boston has the hardest shot staying undefeated through their next six games, but I don't think it's going to be against LA.
It could be.
Jacob's crossing his fingers, rubbing his lucky rabbit's foot, you know, getting his voodoo doll out, his Brad Marchand voodoo doll. I'm sure he has. sitting somewhere in his office there.
I tried. Right. It doesn't work.
All right. And speaking of the San Jose Sharks, the completely defeated San Jose Sharks, when are they going to get their first win? Lou, you are our West Coast hockey expert here. When is San Jose going to get that first win?
When do they play the Ducks?
Not for a while. Not this month.
Yep, there you go. So it's they are a long way off. And this is where I think David Quinn will be really challenged, I think, this season as the head coach. I don't know that the Sharks got enough for Carlson when he was traded away to the Penguins. They didn't get enough in return, enough quality. And so there are not the bodies to fill that blue line spot. the goaltending is going to continue to be suspect until they get a true number one. Right now, it's a sort of a 2A, 2B. Nothing against the guys, but you know, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that there's enough going on in San Jose and the Barracuda in the AHL across the street. I don't know that there's enough in the cupboard to fill the needs for the Sharks. It's going to be a while. They are going to be winless, I think, for another couple of weeks.
Okay. Jacob.
Man, looking at their schedule, it is brutal.
I got to mention, with Lou's prediction, when they play the Ducks for the first time, they will be 0-14 because they play them on November 12th as the first matchup.
I was being facetious.
But I know.
could be.
Yeah. Sorry, Jacob, go ahead.
Man, Nashville looked pretty bad, and they're playing Nashville tomorrow or on Saturday when this podcast goes live. If not then,
it's going to be a while, huh?
Maybe on the 7th against Philadelphia?
Okay.
Maybe.
You know, I was thinking about that Nashville game as well, because nothing about Nashville excites me this season. They haven't played great. I mean, what, they've scored, 13 goals through five games, almost three goals a game. I don't know. One thing that makes me think that maybe the San Jose team isn't as bad as they've started out. I mean, one of those losses they had was a 2-1 shootout loss to Colorado in their second game of the season after getting battered 4-1 by Vegas. But then they go ahead and lose, 6-3 to Carolina and then 3-1 to Boston. If it's not that Nashville game, then they have Florida, Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay actually sneakily might be a win for them, but then I think if not Nashville, if not Tampa, they're getting one by the end of the month. They have a game against the Capitals. That has to be the one. That has to be the latest they're going to go without getting a win.
I'm also just going to say in that 2-1 shootout loss to Colorado, Colorado had 52 shots.
They had 52 shots, and San Jose led the entire game until like the last 2 minutes of the third period.
Yeah.
When Kale McCarr finally netted one. So
yeah,
it's, they played Colorado good. Colorado didn't play particularly well that game. But San Jose, I mean, they surprised me. I thought that was going to be a, brush that one off. We're coming away with the W. I came home and it was an overtime because I had a hockey game that night and Emily's watching the game. I'm like, how is this, I came home in the third period. How is this still 1-0? And then it went to overtime and then it went to shootout and it went a few rounds into the shootout. I'm like, how long is this going to go?
Here's the problem though, guys. Everyone else is slowly going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
San Jose, I don't think is going to get better this year.
No.
Everyone else has got enough talent that they will improve game over game. Sorry to say, for Shelley and Jack Lima, I don't know that there's enough talent on the ice or behind the bench for the Sharks to improve game over game. That's the problem.
Yeah.
At least in my eyes.
Okay. So, Lou, your prediction, and this will be our unofficial prediction before we get into our picks for the week. Okay. Your unofficial prediction for when they get their first is going to be next month.
Yeah.
All right.
Because Jacob? I don't think any of the ones between now and the end of this month are beatable. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jacob, you had, what was it? The 7th when they play the Flyers.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, maybe. I kind of want to pick tomorrow.
It's your life. Do what you want. I'm gonna go pick.
They're giving us Nashville. I think they'll just squeak one out. Okay. Ugly game.
All right. I'm going to go with that Capitals game on the 29th. I think that's when they're going to get their first W. I'm with you, Jacob. I feel that Nashville game, but I don't know.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to switch. I didn't see the Capitals. I forgot they suck now. Yeah, I'm thinking going Capitals.
Oh. Where have you been the last two seasons?
Well, I mean, Washington wasn't that bad last season, but this season they've
really?
It's been bad this season. Yeah.
They were bad last season.
They were competent. They were close.
They almost made a wild card spot. They were if a lot of stuff aligned for them at the end of the season.
Right. Yeah,
there was a chance. But you know they were bad last season. They will continue to be bad this season. Okay, so you're on board with the Capitals?
Yeah, I
right, and I'm going to flip. I'm going to say Nashville. One of us has to take that game. All right. Okay. Enough of that.
Thanks for the pick.
Seriously, apologies to Shelley and Jack in San Jose. We really don't mean to be dumping on your team, but and they do listen. So
it is what it is. Yes, but yes. We've all been there at some point.
Yes.
Okay. A couple of things to mention as we start moving towards the end of the episode. First, let's talk about the situation in Winnipeg. Fans are not too terribly happy with the product on the ice. In fact, Tuesday night's game was reported. There were more than 4,000 seats left empty in their stadium. I mean, this was their worst attending game in 12 seasons for the Winnipeg Jets, formerly the Atlanta Flames. But I think we're only counting since they've moved to the Winnipeg area. Jacob, you wanted to harp on this. I don't know if you want to gloat, but I'm going to give you a little bit of time here.
I'm not going to gloat. I'm just going to say I feel bad for the people of Winnipeg because they're being priced out really hard. The Winnipeg Jets are charging a lot for tickets and they're not, and it just doesn't make sense for a lot of people to attend, especially earlier in the season. In three games, they average a total of 12,000 people going into that building. And they have one of the smallest buildings in the NHL with a capacity of 15,000. So on average, they have 3,000 empty seats. And I can't imagine that it's going to get better because the prices year over year have continued to rise and fans just are getting priced out.
Welcome to professional sports there, Winnipeg. Your casual fans getting priced out everywhere.
I remember seeing the CFL team, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, basically sold out for the last handful of seasons every game. Fans will show up. The Winnipeg fan base is big and it is dedicated, but the management really has to do better on making it affordable to go to a hockey game.
I miss the days when, and I'm sure Lou's going to, eclipse me on this one. And this was only a few years ago, I was able to go see a Colorado Avalanche game for $25 and get a beer because that was tied with a ticket. Up in the nosebleed seats, up in what we call Mount Loud. Now those tickets are
$60.
$60
for?
Yep.
Do you know how much they charge in Edmonton for that?
How much?
For nosebleeds? At least $115 Canadian.
Wow. Well, I mean, Winnipeg's cheap seats, at least for a game against the Dallas Stars, November 11th, $63. That's about the price is what we're paying in Ball Arena for those seats.
Yeah. Well, with adjusted for inflation or adjusted for the exchange rate, that would be what, 40-ish, 45 American?
That's true. So, that's right. So, I forgot it's in Canadian here.
Yeah. A lot of fans are just not happy.
I understand. Price increases are horrible.
And also, I think the lower bowl seats are probably because they're the most visible when you're watching the broadcast, and you see a lot of empty seats in the broadcast. You know, it sends much more of a statement, I think.
For that game, yes. The what price is this current ticket going for? It says I have two tickets selected. Anyways, it's it looks like about $108 Canadian for the lower bowl.
Yeah.
That's not bad. But that's against the Stars, and I don't know how excited I'd be for that.
Let's go Winnipeg versus – let's go November 9th in term. Just lower bowl, where? 157 for lower bowl.
Yeah.
To 400.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to get those seats. Jeez. Everyone has those ridiculously outpriced seats. Lou, I mean, outside of these – tickets were given to me by a friend. What is the cheapest you've paid to go attend an NHL game that you remember?
That I remember? God, you just want to make me old, don't you?
I put out my $25 tickets, which I thought were one of the best deals I had.
Probably the cheapest I ever paid with, you know, Madison Square Garden was probably probably about $25. Total.
Okay.
All in for the lower bowl. Wow. Lower bowl.
Oh, lower bowl. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, wow. Again, this is, I'm ancient. Come on.
That's why we keep adjusted here. For
we didn't have tape now. Back in. We didn't have tape back in those days. We just used wooden sticks.
Right.
You know, it just used wooden clubs and, no face masks. Again, my first game was chain link fence, not plexiglass. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, $25 was probably, that was difficult to come up with.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You always pay the premium to get closer to the action.
73, 70, you know, when I would have been buying the tickets myself, mm-hmm. 72, 73, 74. Yeah.
Yep. I mean, just to go to show you how you know, times and prices change. It's just, it does feel like it's getting ridiculous, but then you have to remember that, you know, there are times when some clubs don't increase those prices. We got the salary cap that's going to be going up. We have revenue that, you know, these clubs need to try and make up because of the, you know, previous seasons when we didn't have fans in the building. All that's going to compound and it's going to increase the prices of your ticket going forward. Concessions, that's another gripe I'm going to have for another day because those have always been way too expensive. And, I just the expense. That's why I haven't gone in years. No, that's not why I haven't gone in years. All right. Enough harping on the good old days of when ticket prices were cheap. Let's move on into our picks of the week. It is that time, Jacob. Jacob, I threw some in there.
I made one change.
Any up there?
I did one change earlier.
Oh, so, I'm guessing which one you took out. Oh no, you didn't. Okay.
Yeah, I put in the Boston and LA. I forget which one I removed, but we'll start with that game. How about that? Picks of the week for this season, for the first line of the podcast. I'm insisting this is the first line.
Second line. We're the second line. Where we belong.
I'm insisting.
This is our home. You too good for your home?
Yes. Okay. Boston at LA. Lou, we'll start with you.
Well, I guess I have to go Boston.
Okay. Richard.
Boston.
Well, I am really confident in the LA pick, so I'm going to go with LA.
You
just
would.
To line up with my other pick, okay. Because I hate Boston. Next game.
We're aware.
The Vancouver Canucks, who had a really good start to the season by beating the out of the Oilers, at the Florida Panthers. Richard, I'll start with you.
You know, this is going to be a really good game. I can't believe I'm going to say this. I'm going to go with Vancouver on this one.
Oh.
I went with them last week, and it panned out well for me.
Yeah. Lou, who do you got?
I'm going to take Florida.
Okay. I'm going to go. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No reason.
Okay. I'm going to go Vancouver. Elias Pettersson has been looking great. Same with Brock Besser.
Mm-hmm.
Both those guys have looked fantastic this season up to this point. Hoping they'll continue that strong form. Next game, true barn burner. Anaheim Ducks at the Arizona Coyotes. Lou, who do you got?
Coyotes. I like the Coyotes.
Yeah.
They beat St. Louis last night, I think 6-2. That was the final.
Yeah. Richard?
Yeah, give me the Kachinas at the mullet. I'm going with the Coyotes.
Yeah, I think this is their season opener tonight or tomorrow night. And I really like Arizona. I think they're going to be a sleeper team this year. They already are a sleeper team there. They might actually be in a playoff spot at some point throughout the season.
Nobody's watching them right now, and it's not because their arena only seats 5,000 people. It's because nobody
that somehow seats more than the Winnipeg Jets.
Oh, come on. They had at least 10,000 people there.
Anyways, speaking of the Winnipeg Jets, they are playing in Edmonton. Richard, thoughts?
Winnipeg.
What? Okay, Lou?
It's a tough call, but I am going to take the Oilers.
Okay. I'm also going to for the Oilers. I just don't have confidence in Winnipeg's depth at all, and Edmonton will break. McDavid and Draisaitl will score enough. And our last game, going to be a really good game, Carolina at Colorado. Lou?
I have Carolina. I've got to stick with them from that earlier prediction.
Okay, Richard.
I'm going to go full homer here. I'm going Avs.
Okay. So I'm going to pick Colorado, and the reason why is because the Carolina Hurricanes are averaging 4.8 goals against a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of goals. And don't get me wrong, they're scoring 4.6, but...
And that's almost as many goals as Colorado scoring per game. So, I mean, they're right in that average there.
Yeah, so I'm going Colorado. I think Colorado has a bit more stability behind the net, and both offenses will do their thing. I think Colorado will take it home eventually when the dust settles. That's it for the picks of the week. If you'd like to follow along on X, use the hashtag PHNPicks. And follow our Twitter at @PHN_podcast.
I like how you threw in the jab at the rebranding of Twitter as X.
It's so hard to remember. It's not even a jab, actually. I don't know what to call it.
I can't tell you how many times I'm just so tired of writing as so-and-so said on X, formerly known as Twitter. It's like, yes, we know it's formerly. Can we just still call it Twitter, please?
Yes, X is, I do. Yes.
I do too. You tweet. It's yep. Twitter. I mean, that's still the website. All right. Parting thoughts. Lou, I know you have a few things to get to here. So the mic is yours.
So this was sad earlier in the week, but we're going to try and make something good out of this. A very good friend of mine, Brian Hennessy out of Sacramento, California. I've known him for... not quite 20 years, really great friend and brother. That's how close we were, and we had arguments brother to brother as well. He passed last week peacefully, and so a group of us, a global group of us, got together yesterday on Zoom, and we are going to carry on his work. And one of the things we're going to do to try and get some attention to Brian is we've started a hashtag across all sorts of platforms, especially LinkedIn. But I've started it on Twitter, and it's the hashtag is YOUNIQUE. So unique in a new, in a different spelling, unique J Brian Hennessy. And it's H-E-N-N-E-S-S-Y. Brian was a larger than life character and perhaps one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. And I will miss him terribly for the rest of however many days I have. He was just a terrific guy, and trying to get that hashtag going so that we can do a wiki page. We're thinking about creating a artificial intelligence presentation where it's his visage in the presentation going through some of the things that he did in his life. So thanks, Richard and Jacob, for that time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lou. Jacob.
Looking forward to the festivities for the Heritage Classic in Edmonton. Oilers versus Flames, can't go wrong with that game. Looking very forward to it. It'll be next Friday, or I think it's, no, next Saturday. It'll be great. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Are you going to be sporting one of those Edmonton Oiler Heritage Classic jerseys?
Well, I still need my arms. I'm not selling that.
Okay. My parting thoughts, interesting playlist I came across on Spotify actually today as we were driving around in the car. Emily really wasn't digging the kind of music I was playing through Spotify, and she decided to look for a new category. Well, I didn't know this. I'm aware of lo-fi. It is a very relaxing genre of music that I tend to enjoy every now and then. And we both kind of enjoy listening to it whenever the mood strikes us. But lo-fi cover songs. I mean, we heard Cake by the Ocean. There were a few others. Dancing in the Moonlight by Top Loader. But, you know, lo-fi edition of that. It was interesting yet enjoyable is how I would describe that. Pleasantly surprised how much I actually enjoyed listening to lo-fi cover songs and enjoy. And I plan to enjoy listening to more as we go further on. All right, that does it for this edition of the Pro Hockey News Podcast. Again, you can follow us on Twitter, and I will not call it X. You can follow us on Twitter at Pro Hockey News Podcast. Again, you can make your picks and compete against us using the hashtag PHN Picks. Be sure to go to our Spotify page. Take part in that poll. Who's going to win? Who's going to lose their first game? Boston, Colorado, Vegas? Who knows? See if anybody actually picks Vegas on this one. For Lou Lafredo and Jacob Doherty, I am Richard Cote, and I will talk to you listeners next week.